Today is an interesting, special day. It's the 19th of Kislev. And the 19th of Kislev celebrates when Rabbi Shneur Zalman, who is, we just mentioned, you know, when he read B'chukotai, you didn't hear any curses. So he was teaching the inner dimension of Torah. He published Tanya in 1796, or the end of 1796-1797, and the opponents of Hasidism managed to frame him, mostly on the basis of the funds that he was sending to Israel in order to support the Hasidic community there, who had gone in 1777, a large group, several hundred people, families, had gone. And so they said it's being sent to the Turks, to Turkey, which was hostile to Russia. So he was arrested. But today, in 1798, 220 years ago, but today, the 19th of Kislev, which was also a Tuesday, then he was released. Now, when he was arrested, he saw everything as happening by divine providence. He thought to himself, why am I arrested? It could be that heaven is not happy, that I am disseminating the inner dimension of Torah. For centuries, it's been kept for a very close esoteric circle. And maybe I shouldn't do it. So when he was released, he felt, I'm getting the heavenly go-ahead. You know, maybe he had more like visionary experiences as well, but you know, just the fact that he was released meant there's a go-ahead, yes, you should communicate these teachings. And so, in fact, the fifth Lubavitcher Rebbe explains there was a change in style before he was arrested, before Peterburg, as it's called, and after Peterburg. The change after Peterburg was the discourses became much more clear in intellectual terms. You could study them, you could understand them. They went into the topics in a more organized way. Before, many of them were very, very short, like two paragraphs long, three paragraphs long, just like very radiant. But you couldn't, you know, if you had an inspired soul, you could link to them. But then he was like putting it more in a clear, organized way. So he wrote a letter to his dear friend Reb Levi Yitzchak Berdichev, and another letter to Reb Baruch of Medziboz, who was the grandson of the Baal Shem Tov. And he wrote saying that while I was saying Tillin, I came to the verse Pada b'shalom nafshi. Now in the first text we have, that's verse Yutet, verse 19. Pada b'shalom nafshi mikravli. He, that means God, redeemed in peace my soul from my battle. Ki v'rabim hayu imadi, because there were many who were with me. So there were many with him, and we could understand that as the many, many, you know, thousands of Hasidic followers. He had many followers. They were praying for him. They were very anxious, very, very anxious. In fact, if one goes into a Chabad synagogue on a Shabbat, or any day, it's very different to a Polish synagogue, in that the men do not have a silver collar kind of thing on their talit. If you in a regular Polish synagogue, they're large, beautiful silver things on the top of the talit, because when he was arrested, everyone took those off to give for the fund that they needed money to organize defending him and so on. And there are interesting stories of things that happened. There was a one of the officials in the prison was someone who was interested in the Bible, and he asked him a question. while he was in prison. He said, why is it that God asked Adam, Ayeko, where are you? After he ate from the tree of knowledge. Didn't God know? It's a good question. It's the kind of question, you know, Rashi answers. Rabbi Shneur said to him, you know, God asks everyone, where are you? In a very sort of meaningful way, which impressed this person very much.
That's just the way you ask.
There's another story that the Tsar heard, that there was this very notable figure in prison, and he went in plain clothes, like dressed like an ordinary soldier or something like that, he came to see Reb Shneur Zalman in his cell. So when he came in, immediately Reb Shneur Zalman stood up and said something, mumbled something. So the Tsar said, what did you just say? He said, I said the blessing that one says when one sees a king. How do you know I was a king? I am a king. How do you know that? Because with you is the prince of Russia, the heavenly Tsar, the heavenly prince. All right, so we have this verse, Padar v'shalom. It's actually a melody. Padar v'shalom, nafshi mikrav li, ki v'rabim hayu imadi. And it goes on. It's quite a long melody. It goes all the way to the end of this psalm. And the last three words, Va'ani eftach bach, Va'ani eftach bach, Va'ani eftach bach, Va'ani eftach bach, Yadadam bam badadam badadam, Ha-yadadadadadadam badadam, Yom badadam badadam bayam, Yom bam yom bam yom. Okay, so we took the beginning and the end, like your two children, Bereshit and Vayechi. Okay, let's look at the verse. Let's look at the actual discourse. Now, it's an intriguing discourse, actually, because the Rebbe said it on the 19th of Kislev, 1964. And actually, it is a discourse by the fourth Lubavitcher Rebbe, the Rebbe Maharash, who said it in 1871. Only the text that we have of it from 1871 is very brief. And the Rebbe said it in a kind of expanded way, and which is this that we have in front of us. And then the Rebbe added some footnotes to it. And that is published in the Book of Discourses of Reb Shmuel, the fourth Lubavitcher Rebbe, for the year 1871. This discourse appears. So we're looking at something which is based on very closely on the Rebbe Maharash's discourse, but with a certain expansion by the Rebbe. Padar b'shalom nafshi mikrav li ki berabim hayu imadi. He redeemed in peace my soul from the battle that I had because the many who were with me. V'darshu al ze bagmara. And in the Talmud, it comments on this. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu. God said, Kol ha'osek b'torah b'gmilut chasadim u'mitpalel im ha'tzibur. Anyone who studies Torah and does good deeds and prays with the community, usually meaning with a minion, although later in the discourse it says at least in the time of the minion. And also people sometimes talk about praying with the community, praying with your full self, like there's a community inside us. There's all the 10 svirot of our own soul. So to pray with one's whole being, that can also be understood as praying with the community. I consider it as if that person has redeemed me, says God, Ulavanai and my children, Mibein Umot HaOlam, from among the nations of the world. Now, Uchaferish Rashi, as Rashi comments there, Padav Shalom, he redeemed in peace. Now, the word peace, Zeshasak Padivre Shalom, it means someone who is involved in words of peace. What's words of peace? Dahainu Torah. Torah is peace. Why is Torah peace? Dichtiv kol netivoteh shalom. It says all the paths of God, of the Torah, of all its paths, meaning all the paths of the Torah, are peace. Lo nitna Torah ele la'asot shalom ba'olam. The Torah was given in order to bring peace to the world. So when it says peace, it's a code word for Torah. V'chein gmilut chasadim nami. Now, the doing good deeds, it's also peace. Nami shalom hu. It's also peace. Why? Because when you do good deeds, you give charity, you do a favor to someone. Uvalidei achva v'shalom. You get brotherly feelings of kindness and of love and of peace. So that's also Torah. V'chein mitpalelim atzibur. So that's also peace. So we're learning from the word peace. Peace means A, Torah. Peace means B, Gmilut Chasadim. V'chein mitpalelim atzibur, and the praying with the community, that's hinted at in the verse, Shezeu inyan ki v'rabim hayu imadi. There were many people with me. Because when you pray in a community, like you go to the synagogue and you pray, it's not only you praying. There's a whole group of people praying with you. You can always reflect that there are Jews around the whole world playing at the same time. But there's a particular power when they're actually there with you. Shehit Balalui mean that they prayed with you. Now, there's one line here, line 11. V'tzarich lahavin, what does it mean? Ma'u inyan de pada'ani, what does it mean? Redeemed me. Redeemed me. Now, that's something that, in other words, God is saying that by doing these things, learning Torah, doing good deeds, which like tzedakah, and prayer, you're redeeming me. Okay, now the force of this fascinating discourse is about the effect that we have through our service of God, through our learning Torah, doing mitzvot, giving tzedakah, prayer, the way in which we somehow have some effect on the divine. And that's a fascinating concept. Someone I know, noted figure, professor, He makes the point, what's the dividing line between the revealed Torah and the esoteric Torah, the esoteric dimension? The revealed Torah tells us what God tells us to do, and we do it. Or, maybe we don't, and so then, what happens if you do it, what happens if you don't do it? But it's defining, it's like a one-way track from God to us. What's the esoteric dimension? Which you can find in the Midrash and in the Talmud and in certain areas, it's that we are having an effect on the divine. There's some sense in which what we do has some kind of effect. It reveals the divine, it reveals the divine on a deeper level below, it reveals the divine on a deeper level above. There's some kind of process involving the divine. So there's sort of a two-way process. Now, you might think that's ridiculous. What are you talking about? We're tiny human beings made of little blobs of jelly. How can we have anything to do? How can we have any effect on the divine, the infinite divine, the oneness, the infinite oneness, which is the source of all being? But the thing is, we're not just a blob of jelly. We've got a little spark of the divine inside us. So since we've got a spark of the divine, it's understandable that our spark of the divine can have an effect. It's on working back to the essence of the divine. There's a two-way communication. That's See, so there's a sense in which the revealed parts of the Torah work, even if we're just blobs of jelly. So God told this blob of jelly, do this and don't do that. Okay, so we'll do it. But the esoteric dimension emphasizes you're not just a blob of jelly. You've got a divine spark in you, and the effect of that divine spark is very, very important on many different levels, including in relation to the essence of the divine, to the...
But surely the revealed part is a two-way thing. It's not just a one-way thing, because the problem is when it's a one-way thing that people leave the door.
Well, that's a very good point, Nicole. I mean, that's why the Baal Shem Tov believed, and for that matter, so did Rab Chaim Vital before him, that it was an important thing to reveal the esoteric dimension. In order for Judaism to have a healthy kiyum, for it to exist in a positive way, it's better for the esoteric part to be opened up and revealed, and become everyone's property. Because otherwise, the problem is they're being told, do this and don't do that. All right, it's, there's the offer of reward. It's the concept of reward and punishment. But just that concept of reward and punishment doesn't necessarily affect people in such a way that they're really going to do what they're supposed to do and avoid doing what they're not supposed to do, especially when there are so many blatant instances, which the Talmud itself comments on, and where we have there are even verses about it. Derech Rasha'im Tzalecha, the way of the wicked can be very successful, and there are all kinds of problems of bad things happening to good people. So reward and punishment isn't even if that would be a good way to serve God, which the Rambam says it's not. It's only there for the beginning of service, like training a child, and then you have to serve God with wanting the closeness to God for the sake of closeness to God, not for the sake of any kind of reward. As Rabbi Schneerson himself used to say, Ich will nicht dein Gan Eden, I don't want your Garden of Eden. Ich will nicht dein Olam Haba, I don't want your world to come. Ich will nur dich allein, I want only you. Okay, so let's leave out the rest of this paragraph, and we're going to go to section Bet. V'yesh lahavin tchila be'yo inyan ha'avot. We're going to consider the idea that the avot of the patriarchs, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, miss out the brackets, sh'aleim amru, about whom the sages say in the Midrash, Ha'avot hein ha'mekava. The patriarchs are the chariot. Now the chariot refers to what? What does it mean, the chariot? Jacqueline? Do you know which chariot?
The vehicle that takes somebody somewhere, but it's driven.
But which chariot are we speaking about?
The human chariot.
Well, when it says...
Isn't that supposed to be a description of...
Is that the Torah?
You're getting there. Tick, 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 yes.
Tick, 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 sorry.
We read it as the Haftorah on Shavuot. It's the chariot of Yechezkel, Ezekiel. Chapter 1 of Ezekiel is the most dramatic description of a kind of spiritual chariot, which is in a sense made of angels. And some of the angels have the form of wheels covered with eyes. And then there's like posts coming up, which are also angels with four faces. The face of a lion, the face of an eagle, the face of an ox, and the face of a man. And above these four posts is a platform, and on that platform is a throne. And on the throne is the bottom part of the shape of a man. So it's like it might be unfamiliar because it is against Jewish practice to paint this. It's obviously a very powerful graphic image, but we're not supposed to draw it. So it's considered something very close to the divine.
But wasn't it supposed to be something like the description of how we're supposed to cleave to Hashem, or how our soul should be driven towards Hashem? Isn't there something?
You're right. To be a chariot for Hashem, that concept, you see, the Midrash says the patriarchs were a chariot for God. And Tanya picks that up and presents that as the ideal of how a person should be, that we should be a chariot for God. In other words, the simple way of understanding it in the Tanya text is that a driver and a chariot, a good driver, as your husband no doubt would be able to instruct, a good driver and his car, his chariot, they're one. You know, that's exactly where the driver wants to go. That's where the chariot drives. The chariot doesn't have a will of its own. So we can understand that in terms of the person and God. The person becomes an instrument of the will of God. So it's one is supposed to do this. For example, you know, just the days of the week, you know, it comes to Shabbat. A person can feel the illumination of Shabbat. Now it's Shabbat, so their whole consciousness and their whole atmosphere, the feeling, it's a Shabbat atmosphere. Comes to Hanukkah, you know, the whole week is illuminated. So that's the... So now he's going to explore this. Because at first sight, Bishlama benogeya lechayot shehim mekava, we can understand with the chayot means animals, here means the angels, which are there with the face of a lion and so on. Okay, so as far as they're concerned, the face of the lion and to the right and the face of an ox to the left, Liotam Nivraim, since they are created things, I think that speaking of them as angels, we're not speaking of them as animals, but speaking of them as angels, they are created, and therefore, Harehim Betelim La Adam Sha'ala Kiseh, they are completely subjugated to the man who is on the throne. That's a quote from Ezekiel, the words, the man on the throne. In other words, to the divine. V'al-yedei-zeh, and through the fact that they are completely given over to him, heim bevchinat mekava elav, they are like a chariot for him, b'dugmat hasus, like a horse, shubatel ala rochev alav, who is completely subjugated, so to speak, to the rider. And so the horse carries the rider. Meaning there are two aspects here. Harishon, the first is that the one riding needs some kind of ascent. That he needs some kind of ascent. So the rider is going to ascend. Now that's a mysterious concept. Right, so the rider is going to be carried upwards. Vahasheni, in the second idea, Shainyan shu bevchinat mekava hu nivra, the thing that is the chariot is created, and it's created, but nonetheless, hu batel el arochev alav, it is given over, it is completely egoless in relation to the rider. And this suspension of ego, that has the effect of lifting the rider. And because the rider is lifted, the created being also is lifted up. So in other words, we have this sequence, that there's the divine, there is something that the divine has created. The thing that the God has created could be, in some sense, separate from the divine, because it's created. The fact of being created means it's at another level, right? It's at another level to the divine, a vastly different level. But nonetheless, that thing which is created is dedicated to the divine in such a powerful way that it has the effect of lifting the divine in some sense, whatever exactly that means. And lifting the divine means that the created thing is also lifted. So the bitul, the selflessness of those creatures or those phenomena that make up the chariot lift the rider of the chariot, and they are themselves lifted up as well. Now that works when we look at the chariot, which in Ezekiel's vision, the chariot is made of angels, different kinds of angels. Avu tzarich la'avin, line 10. But we have to understand, ma'in yan she'avot heinene merkava, what does it mean, the patriarchs of the chariot? Now here we quote a fascinating concept from found in Hasidic teachings. Ha'avot hein mibchinat ha'atzilut. The avot, the nature of Abram, Isaac, Jacob, Sarah, Rebecca, Rachel, Leah, they are from the realm of Atzilut. They're from the realm of emanation. They are on a very exalted spiritual level. They are people, yes, they're flesh and blood, but at the same time, they're on a very exalted spiritual level. Their mode of living is one that they are bonded with the divine the entire time. And he quotes a Kabbalistic phrase, the Iyu b'chiyu ichad, he and his life force are one, Iyu b'gamo ichad. Like God and his radiance is one, God and his vessels is one. So the patriarchs, Abram, Isaac, Jacob, Sarah, and Rebecca, and Rachel, and Leah, they are all completely unified with the divine. In that sense, they're not created like the angels. They're actually on a higher level. V'imkein einu muvan, so if so, it's not understood. What does the Merkava mean for them in relation to these things? That there's a Merkava made of a chariot, made of created things, and the created things are selfless. They make the step of being selfless. The patriarchs are selfless all the way through. So, Hare Einam Tzichim Le'inyan HaBitul. The patriarchs don't need selflessness. Their very self is selfless in relation to God. The self of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and so on is selfless in relation to God. So, and then also there's another question. Where are they carrying? Leheichan tzichim lenasot inyan shel olam atzilut. To where do they have to carry something from the world of Atzilut? Where are they trying to go? All right. So that's concept, this question, and what he's going to bring out is the idea of a kind of spiritual aleph, and that spiritual aleph relates to the chariot, and it relates to every person. And when we consider it in relation to every person, then we're able to understand the way in which the aleph represents different aspects of a person's life in relation to God, and the way, in some sense, God is exalted through this. Now, interestingly, that is quite a common theme in our prayer, to exalt God. And here is a kind of exaltation which comes about by the fact of us keeping the Torah, learning Torah, giving charity, praying to God, that kind of thing. And it comes out as a letter Aleph, which in some sense is lifting upwards, lifting the divine upwards. Is there any? It sounds very mysterious, right? Okay, I just have to check something because my wife might try to get hold of me. Yep, okay. Let me just...
You said? Oh, okay.
Sorry?
No, no, you finish what you're doing.
Yeah. Sorry?
You said that the avot were selfless, so where were they trying to go? Where were they trying to get to? So I suppose the answer to that must be, the only thing is that they were trying to get to Hashem.
Mm.
If they're actually purposefully trying to go somewhere, that must be the only thing. I mean, the route they need to take is guided by Hashem telling them how to take the chariot, where to direct the chariot.
Mm. Yeah.
That sounds right.
No, I think you're right. I mean, the point is, in all these teachings, is that God is infinite. So there's always another step closer and closer and closer. And wherever one is, there's always further, because God is infinite. So it's never as if one has reached it there. So that yearning expression of Rabbi Shneur Zalman, Ich will nicht dein Gan Eden, I don't want your Garden of Eden, Ich will nicht dein Olam Habo, I don't want your world to come, Ich will nur dich allein, I want only you, only you. That only you is infinite, is endless. It's always higher than that. All right, so let's try and see if we can understand this from section Gimel. V'yuvan, this will be understood. That's very promising. Let's hope so. Yeah. We can take this as a blessing from the authors, the fourth Lubavitch, whatever, the seventh Lubavitch, that we will understand. We'll understand this b'hakdim, by first considering bio inyan mekevet, Achayot. What this chariot is, with Pnei Arya, the face of the lion, Pnei Shor, the face of the ox, and Pnei Adam, the face of a man, and they're lifting up the throne, and the man on the throne, B'inyan Hu, it's as follows. Adam, you see, that's the thing, there's Adam. There's the Adam, the man, so to speak, it's not a man, but the man, it's described as a man, who is on the throne. The concept Adam means the coming together of three lines, like the three lines, the three lines in the image of a letter Aleph, which is the first letter of the word Adam, of the word man. Yud lemaila, v'yud lemata, a yud above, a yud below. Right, so here we have a yod. Well, it's easier if we draw it in that order. And here, you can see that as a yod. So there's a yod there and a yod there, and then there's a line which it's joining. Now, and these are like the three lines of the Sfirot. On this side, Chochmah, you see, here we have Chochmah, wisdom. So you've got Chochmah, Bina. And in the middle is Da'at. Then you have Chesed and Gvura. And then in the middle is Rachamim. So let's put that over here. Are we okay with these Hebrew words? Netzach, Hod, and Yesod. So we've got Chochmah Chesed Netzach on the right, Bina Gvura Hod on the left, and Da'at Rachamim Yesod in the middle. Right? So that's what he goes through. Now, he calls it not Rachamim, but Tiferet. Now, those three lines, line 29 of this page, Vav. V'kasher shloshet ha-kavim, when these three lines, heim behit chabrut v'itkalalut, are joined and integrated, azay nikraim b'shem Adam, then that is a person. Very interesting statement. In order to be a person, we need these different dimensions connected and integrated in our being. And when they are there, then we're a real person. Then we are Adam, which includes women. That's it. Now, now we go on the next page, page Zayin. V'tzarich lahavin. Now we have to understand. Hare Adam, begematria mem hei. If you take the word Adam, Aleph is 1, Dalet is 4, and mem is 40. So that's 45. And that makes 45. Now, the word ma, this word ma, mem hei, it's a number, but it's also a word, ma, and it means what? But it links to a phrase in the Torah where Moses and Aaron are being, everyone is shouting at them, and they say, V'nachnu ma, who are we that you should complain to us? We're no one. We're just doing what Hashem tells us to do. So the word ma represents total selflessness. So ma is selfless. V'im kein, if the concept of Adam, of Adam, of man, is selflessness. Eich shayach lomer she'adam hu b'tmunat shlosh kavim. How can you say that man is these three lines, the way they are in the letter Aleph? Because the ma of man is selfless, doesn't have a tziyur, doesn't have an image. It's beyond this, such an image. But in fact, shehir notenet, in fact, it works well. The kevan shetzrichim lefoldit kalalut b'shlosh kavin. Since we have to make an integration of these three lines, which in themselves are opposite one from the other. Shaharikavi yamin in yano hamshacham elamayla lamata. The right hand line is a flow from above to below. The left-hand line is a flow from below to above. So they're opposite. And then we have the middle line. How are we going to get them all integrated together? You have to have a flow from a higher place, in terms of which all of them are batel, they are all abnegated. So this is where we have the word ma, right? This ma, this 45, this Adam, the numerical value of the word Adam, which represents total selflessness, the way in which the Aleph is integrated, that these all these different dimensions click together, is by being totally given over to the ma, which is beyond. So in order for us as real people to be whole, we need to have a sense of that which is beyond us. Now, and then, line 19, mitzad bitulam, because of, now this ma, this Adam, is actually the Adam who is on the throne. This is the Adam which is on the throne. So it's by our sense, or by the sense at this level of that which is exalted beyond it, that's how they're able to be integrated. And through that, they lift the throne and the man on it. The Adam, which could be of three lines, will go to a more exalted level, in which the selflessness is apparent, shenimshach mibchinat ma, which comes from this higher level. So, in other words, there is a movement upwards to more and more abnegation of self. So this dimension, which, if we're interpreting it as us, right, this is our character, as it were. The wisdom, the kindness, the power of endurance, the submission, the severity, meaning reaching upwards, bina, this is all the flow up towards God. And then there's this line connecting everything. That all in relation to this supreme point of abnegation, we feel this abnegation rising up, lifting us up towards that aspect of the divine, and through that everything is carried upwards. Aliyata olamot, it's the elevation of existence higher and higher. Now, it goes into a discussion which is see, one aspect of the discussion here is the idea of tikkun and tohu. Now, tikkun means the world of repair. And the emotions of the world of repair, they integrate together. This is online on page chet, but I'm not going to read it inside. Then you have the emotions of the world of chaos, which is higher than the world of repair. But nonetheless, what we're trying to do is achieve a kind of integration together, and which therefore, you see, there's a level higher. There's always a level higher, and in terms of, normally we think of this as the realm of repair, but beyond it, it's the world of chaos. Now that world of chaos really needs to be tamed. And by us ascending towards it, that's to a higher level, we're bringing about this whole process of tikkun, of repair, is extending higher and higher and higher. You see, there's a kind of a bar, the realm of chaos, the realm of tikkun, and the way that I understand this is that we're trying to raise the bar, we're trying to extend the realm of repair to further and further reaches, higher and higher. And ultimately, that world of chaos will become a world of repair in itself. But so that's the movement upwards. That's the movement in that direction. And then there's a very... So now, if we go to page 11, Yud Aleph, what we missed out is a very Kabbalistic section about the way in which the Avot, the patriarchs, it's describing different details of the spherotic worlds and the different realms that Rabbi Isaac Luria speaks about, and it's all about this idea of going higher and higher and being able to reach to the very highest realm. You see, in the Sedra Vayetze, it speaks about Jacob with the sticks, and it says that the sheep that were born were Akudim, Nukudim uvrudim. So vrudim is the world of repair. It's like how they were spotted. Different ways of describing their spot. There's the world of repair. There's the world of chaos. And then there's a realm beyond that. And so it's moving higher and higher and higher. Now, in section Hay, which is on page Yud Aleph, V'hine kol zeh pa'alu avot kodem matan Torah. All this was achieved by the patriarchs before the giving of the Torah. Aval acharei matan Torah, but after the giving of the Torah. So in other words, this like mystical dimension, that was the patriarchs. And only they could do it, and it was before the giving of the Torah. But after the giving of the Torah, now comes a fascinating concept. Nitan lochol echad v'echad miYisrael. Every single Jewish man and woman is given b'yerusha, in inheritance from the patriarchs, the power that we are able to achieve this quality of the patriarchs are the chariot. In other words, we too can elevate the man who is on the throne to a level beyond kilo adamhu, beyond man, beyond any kind of image. In other words, higher and higher and higher dimensions of the divine. How do we do that? Through Torah and mitzvot. Torah and mitzvot, which might seem to us, you know, this is what you have to study and this is what you have to do. In fact, they're the most incredible cosmic operation that we are taking part in. Since through Torah we are achieving this elevation in this way, so it's understood that the Torah itself has got these different dimensions. Because in the Torah it says, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, I am the Lord your God. Anochi Misha Anochi, I goes higher than the image of Adam. Adam is a level. Even it says, Zot HaTorah Adam, the Torah is Adam. And in that sense, the way in which there are 248 positive commandments, 365 negative commandments, and the sages tell us the 248 number is the number of limbs of the body, and the 365 are the number of sinews. So that means the number of mitzvot in the Torah actually represents the makeup of a human being. And so that's called by the Zohar the limbs of the king. And that's why when we keep mitzvot, we're actually connecting with God. We're bonding with God. By keeping a mitzvah, whatever the mitzvah is, we are bonding with God. And so all this makes the image of man, but there's and line 29, and in the Torah we have the idea of moving up and of flowing down. What's the moving up? Line 29, the mitzvot such as truma, masrot, which are something which is taken off from below to above. And then there's mitzvot like tzitzit and tefillin. They are drawing from above downwards. So certain mitzvot are on this route upwards, of which prayer is one as well, and certain are on the route downwards, like giving tzedakah is downwards. And that's also the idea, what it says, that the person studying Torah and doing good deeds and praying with the community that we began with, because good deeds is a flow from above to below. Prayer is a flow from below to above. And Torah is the middle line. So there we've got good deeds, tzedakah in general, prayer, and Torah, which is the middle line. And all that is the integrated unity which elevates everything and rises to the Adam and lifts the Adam to the realm Kilo Adamhu, that God is beyond that, even that image, that imageless image, that He's beyond that as well, going higher and higher to the higher and higher realm. And that's what it means, Pada B'Shalom, Nafshi, God is redeemed in peace, my soul. Anyone studying Torah, doing mitzvot, kindness, and praying with the tzibur, it's considered as if He's redeemed me from among the nations of the world. What does it mean, redeemed me? That's the lifting up of the divine. So, and the nations of the world, in this sense, represents the level of concealment, that it's lifting up the divine to a higher and higher level. So what's really happened here is that it's taken this verse that Rabbi Shneur Zalman said as he was being released, and feeling the go-ahead that there is for the whole power of the inwardness of the Torah. And it's taken a passage in the Talmud which comments on this verse and gives it a kind of, you might say, prosaic, it's like an interesting interpretation. It takes the word shalom, interprets the word shalom as Torah on the one hand, good deeds on the other, and that, and prayer, because so it fits those concepts into the verse, and it pada, so it's redeeming God. So it's pada v'shalom nafshi, it's as if God is saying, you redeem me. And so here it's through the an amazing display of the kind of inner dimension teachings that Rav Shneur Zalman has now got the go-ahead to reveal, which we've only taken a little bit of. So there is this concept of the integration of the individual rising higher and higher, reaching ever higher levels of the divine and revealing that divine, which ultimately, by being redeemed down here in this world, brings about the joy and unity and integration of what creation is supposed to be. Go ahead. Now,